From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. The Green New Deal, introduced by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, came before the Senate on Tuesday and failed to get the 60 votes necessary to move to the floor for debate. But it has sparked a public debate about climate policy, unlike any we've seen in recent years. There are a handful of competing climate policy proposals floating around D.C. None set emissions reductions goals as ambitious as the Green New Deal's 2030 deadline, but all profess the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and more than one calls for the use of technology that removes carbon dioxide from the air and puts it back into the ground. It's known as carbon capture and storage. There's broad recognition of the need for such technologies, but also concern that a focus on carbon capture could detract from efforts to move to a renewable energy system. So where does carbon capture and storage stand, and is it ready to meet our needs? Howard Herzog is a senior research engineer at the MIT Energy Initiative and author of Carbon Capture, an overview of the technology published this past fall. Howard, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
When it comes to carbon capture technology, we have had carbon dioxide scrubbers in submarines and spacecraft for decades. That's the only way the air in those spaces stays breathable. But there are only two coal-fired power plants with carbon capture technology in effect, and they've experienced some bumps over the past few years. So what is the challenge when it comes to deploying carbon capture technology in our energy sector?
The big problem is money. It's going to always be cheaper to put CO2 in the atmosphere than to capture it and store it underground. And until there's policy that restricts the amount of CO2 we can put in the atmosphere, it's going to be very hard for CO2 capture projects to proceed.
And assuming there were the funding in place or the financial incentives in place, how would carbon capture in the setting of a power plant actually work?
Well, CO2 is what's called an acid gas. And what you do is you can scrub it with a solvent that's basic. So it's really just an acid-base reaction. The main solvent they use now is a nitrogen-based solvent, sort of like ammonia, a little different. And what you do is you have a big tower that's full of packing, and you put the solvent down the tower, and it wets the packing, and the solvent reacts with the CO2 in the flue gas and pulls it into the solvent.
And what do you end up with after you've gone through that process?
You end up with a what they call a rich amine. So CO2 is in the solvent, so you have a second tower where you release the CO2 and creates a fairly pure stream of CO2. There's some water vapor in there that's easily condensed out.
And what about the much more challenging situation of actually trying to remove the carbon dioxide that is already in the atmosphere? I mean, when you've got a smokestack at a power plant, you've got a pipe that you know has very high levels of carbon dioxide in it. The levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere right now are high from a climate perspective, but not necessarily high enough to make it easy to capture, right? That can be a real challenge.
Correct. And it all comes down to concentration. So how concentrated is the CO2 in the flue gas of a power plant or the atmosphere? In a coal-fired power plant, it's about 12%. In a natural gas combined cycle plant, you're maybe 3 to 5% CO2. In the atmosphere, you're about 0.04% CO2, which is a factor of 300 times lower than you are, say, in a coal gas flue. And that makes it much more difficult in a variety of ways. So all this adds to much more money to capture it from the air.
In 2015, at the Paris Climate Talks, I spoke with one expert who said currently the best technology we have for trying to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere is trees, plain and simple. Would you say that is still the case?
Well, it's the most efficient, that's for sure. It's you're comparing apples and oranges in some ways. There's one way you can combine trees and carbon capture and storage, and that's called bioenergy and CCS. And what that is, you grow the biomass as trees, and then you know, instead of, say, burning coal at a power plant, we burn the trees at the power plant and capture the CO2 in pretty much the same way we do from a coal plant. So now you have the effect of the trees taking the CO2 out of the atmosphere, and then we produce electricity from the trees and at the same time put the CO2 emissions in the ground.
Howard Herzog, your book is called Carbon Capture, but of course once we've captured this carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere or out of smokestacks, the goal is to put it back into the ground and lock it up. When it comes to things like hydraulic fracturing to remove natural gas, there's been some concern about causing earthquakes, inducing seismic activity when we try to inject things into the ground. Is that also a concern for carbon storage, and where do we stand with being able to actually accomplish that?
So technology and projects for putting fluids into the ground have existed for decades. We put lots of fluids in the ground today, but you have to do it correctly. If you put the liquid into the ground too quickly, or you put it into areas where we have, say, tight rock, not very good permeability, and the liquid can't flow through the formation well, you can get a pressure rise in the earth, and that pressure rise can induce seismic activity. And there have been problems of that with fracking. But it can also work well if it's well managed, if you understand your formation, if you monitor the pressure, and you adjust your rates accordingly. We've been injecting CO2 into the earth for enhanced oil recovery projects since the early 1980s. They do acid gas disposal up in Canada, where they're putting not just CO2, but also hydrogen sulfide into the ground. And that's operating with very little problems.
There's also another option besides just putting the carbon back into the ground to store it. We might also use it before we put it into more permanent storage. What kinds of things could we use captured carbon dioxide for?
So that's correct. And as I mentioned, we had enhanced oil recovery where we're using it to help get more oil out of the ground. Of course, if we're worried about climate change, putting CO2 in the ground and taking oil out doesn't help in the long term. So that utilization is very limited. So other uses, the total U.S. market for CO2 is about 10 million tons a year. Unfortunately, we're putting out over 5 billion tons a year through our smokestacks and tailpipes.
And what are those markets for carbon dioxide? What is it used for at this point?
It's the biggest ones are in the food and beverage industry. You see the CO2 bubbles in your soda pop, but they also use it for things like freeze drying. There's other uses. We have CO2 in our fire extinguishers, and there's some industrial uses of CO2. And that's using CO2 in the form we get it out of the smokestack. For most other uses, you need to convert the CO2. CO2 is basically spent fuel. So if we want to use it for other purposes, you have to put energy into it. And in general, there's better uses for that energy. It's cheaper to use that energy directly. So the bottom line is there may be some niche opportunities for utilization, but for the level we want to capture and store CO2 at, most of the CO2 is going to be stored in geologic formations.
Basically, putting it back in the ground where we've pulled it from.
Correct.
As we've extracted fossil fuels.
Correct.
Howard Herzog, there's a pretty broad consensus within the scientific community that we are going to need, or we do need, carbon capture technology in order to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and stabilize carbon dioxide levels at something less than catastrophic for climate change. But there is also widespread concern that focusing on carbon capture and storage could detract from efforts to actually shift to a primarily renewable energy system and actually get off of fossil fuels, kind of an either-or sort of mentality. Do you see that dichotomy?
Well, I see it as a tension. I think it's a false tension. I firmly believe renewables cannot do it all. There's so many uses of energy in our economy that you're going to need different forms of energy. For instance, if you look at certain industrial processes like cement or iron and steel, a significant portion of the CO2 emissions does not come from energy use, but comes from the process itself. For instance, in cement, over half the CO2 comes from turning calcium carbonate into calcium oxide, which is the basis for the production of the cement.
So even if you made that cement in a factory powered by renewable energy, the cement itself would be emitting carbon dioxide that we would need to capture and
correct.
Put back in the ground.
Correct. And there's quite a few processes like that. And then even in the electric industry, renewables are intermittent. And how do you handle that intermittency? Batteries can help somewhat, but there's today no substitute really for what thermal power plants, which are basically powered by fossil fuels, provide in load leveling and for producing energy when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing.
Howard Herzog, at the start of our conversation, you said that what's needed to deploy carbon capture and storage technology is not so much technological development, but policies and market actions that would make it more affordable and more desirable. And on the policy front, you have said that you see those on the right underestimating the problem of climate change and those on the left underestimating the scope of the solutions for climate change. What do you mean by that?
So like on the Green New Deal, I very much agree with the urgency that they say we need to go forward with, but many on the right don't see that urgency as necessary because they're underestimating the magnitude of the problem. And even some on the right don't even think there's much of a problem we need to worry about. However, a lot of proponents of the Green New Deal think the answer, we can do it in 12 years, we can do it with just renewables, and they don't really understand how difficult it is to massively change our energy systems, not just in the U.S., but around the world, and also hit the target of net zero. We're going to need every technology we have, including things like nuclear, carbon capture and storage, along with renewables, energy efficiency, and the list goes on.
Howard Herzog is a senior research engineer at the MIT Energy Initiative and author of Carbon Capture. Howard, thanks so much.
You're welcome.